forget to wait for my blue line. Now I will open the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Effectiveness. Good afternoon. We're going to first, we're waiting on some testimony, so we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2174. Wendy will give us a quick reminder of that.
Madam Chair and members, House Bill 2174 deletes a requirement for the Secretary of State to prescribe a form of contract for conduct of municipal audits. It allows the Secretary of State to direct certain state agencies to withhold 10% of specified state funds otherwise to be distributed to a municipality if the municipality fails to submit an audit report, declares an emergency as effective upon passage, and there is an amendment.
Yes.
And I'll speak briefly to I have a summary on here of the proposed -5 amendment, which addresses the delinquency of audit reports if a municipal corporation is not filed with the Secretary of State by the deadline or has an extended deadline, directs the governing body of a municipal corporation whose audit report contains deficiencies to adopt a plan of action to address those deficiencies and to file that plan of action with the Secretary of State, requires the Secretary of State to notify city or county if deficiencies exist which could result in withholding of state funds, requires the Secretary of State to prepare and maintain an annual summary report with information about municipal corporations and their audits. It requires the Secretary of State to submit the report to the appropriate legislative committee by March 1st of each odd-numbered year. The bill's been found to have minimal revenue impact, minimal fiscal impact, and that's it.
Okay, great. Very much. I will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt HB 2174 with -5 amendments dated 2/23/15.
Okay, Representative Bueller has moved to adopt the -5 amendments. Is there any discussion? Would you like to maybe give us an update on the -5? Anything to add in addition to what Wendy?
No, I think Wendy covered it well. Basically, more definition with regards to timelines. It was a little open-ended in the first edition, and then increased the reporting of the Secretary of State's office to the legislature on how they're upholding these statutory requirements, and then also tracking the delinquency of the local audits in the audit reports to some sort of resolution and reporting that more definitively. So I appreciate the Secretary of State's office and working with them and trying to improve this bill.
Wonderful. Any further discussion?
Could I just ask one question? Since I've been a new member and this is only my third meeting, I don't remember, you know, really getting to have much discussion on this. And so can you just give me the short version of what's the difference between the status quo right now and what this will do? Is it all timelines?
I mean, in terms of the whole
of what is offered?
It's more defining the timeline. So each right now, the timeline in terms of requirements for local jurisdictions to report to the Secretary of State is open-ended, and this would make it 1 year, basically.
Okay.
The thought is, by the time you're ready to do another audit, you should at least have the previous audit in. So
okay.
That's one thought. And then usually those audits produce delinquencies, mm-hmm. That statutory requirement right now, mm-hmm. someone should be tracking, but it's not being reported, and it's not being reported back to the legislature right
okay.
now.
So. All right, thank you.
Yep.
Any further discussion? Okay, with that, is there any opposition to the amendment being adopted? Okay, seeing none, the amendment is adopted. And with that, I will entertain a motion on the bill.
Madam Chair, I move to move House Bill 2174 as amended to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Representative Bueller has moved House Bill 2174 as amended to the floor. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, please call the roll.
Representative Hobie?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
Yes.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bueller?
Yes.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Excused.
And Chair Fagan?
Yes. And Representative Bueller, would you like to carry the bill?
I'd be honored.
Thank you. All right, with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2174. And I still don't see. Okay. And open a public hearing on House Bill 2258. And Wendy will give us a quick description. And John Powell, you can go ahead and come forward.
Madam Chair, House Bill and members, House Bill 2258 prevents and insurers from considering individuals' driving record when determining rates for personal insurance policies, except in specified circumstances when the insurer may consider an abstract of non-employment driving record. Applies to insurance policies issued or renewed on or after the effective date. The bill's been found to have no revenue impact. It may have a fiscal impact, but a statement has not yet been issued, and there are no amendments to the bill.
Go ahead.
Chair Fagan, members of the committee, my name is John Powell, representing State Farm Insurance Companies, here today in support of House Bill 2258. This bill will probably be one of the simplest pieces of legislation you'll see this session, but one of the most difficult to explain and understand if you look at the bill.
Great.
Reading the bill language will drive you crazy, and you will not be able to understand it. So I'm going to try and explain what the problem is, how the bill goes about fixing it, and then point out in the bill language how this is accomplished. So in auto insurance regulation, specifically in how much time an insurer can look back at a driver's experience in terms of how many traffic tickets, traffic accidents they've been involved in to try and match the risk to the premium price, is different for personal insurance than it is for business or commercial insurance. For personal insurance, insurers are limited to 3 years of a look back period, and that 3-year look back period does not apply to business or commercial insurance. However, in one circumstance that we have run into based on the wording of ORS 746260 and ORS 746265, there is a circumstance where an unincorporated company comes in to buy insurance for their business. Because those statutes that were meant to deal with personal insurance don't say personal insurance, they say if an individual purchases the insurance, we are interpreting that to mean that for that company that is unincorporated, we cannot fully rate that policy as a commercial policy and instead have to use some commercial rating and some personal rating because of the use of the word individual instead of personal policy. So that is the issue. And I believe on OLIS, my testimony has been submitted, and on page 2 of the testimony, I lay out 3 examples that I think clearly explain what the bill is intended to do. In example 1, you have Smith Plumbing Incorporated. That is an incorporated business, and it owns a commercial fleet of vehicles. If they were to go to seek apply for insurance on that commercial fleet of vehicles, those vehicles would be commercially rated because it's a business, and the personal insurance 3-year look-back period would not apply because it's an incorporated business. On the other hand, if Smith Incorporated or Smith Plumbing was not incorporated, and they went to get a bid for insurance on their fleet of commercial vehicles, the fleet would be commercially rated in all aspects except they would have to apply the 3-year look-back period that was meant for personal insurance. How it would work if this bill became law, in both those examples, they would both be commercially rated and treated the same. Now, I will point you to the section of the bill that accomplishes this goal. On page 1, line 12, if you look about halfway over at the language, it says a policy of personal insurance is added there. And on page 1, line 30, the same thing. In the middle of the sentence, it says to obtain or renew personal insurance. And that reference to personal insurance is really the only substantive change in the bill. The rest of it, I believe, is legislative council making style and form changes. So that is what the bill seeks to accomplish. If it passes, the only thing it would affect is an unincorporated business seeking business insurance for their automotive fleet. So it's pretty narrow. We're not aware of any opposition to the bill. I have run it by the insurance division, and while they do not take positions on the bill, they did say that they believe the bill accomplishes what our intent is for it to accomplish.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Powell? Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious, it doesn't appear to be in this bill, but it's probably in other statutes where they actually define what personal insurance is.
I believe personal insurance is defined in, I think it is in here, 746-600.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to be heard on House Bill 2258? Okay, with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2258 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3056. Representative Kenny Geyer, if you want to come up, and Wendy will give us a summary.
Madam Chair and members, House Bill 3056 provides that a crematorium may not be certified by the State Mortuary and Cemetery Board if the proposed crematorium is determined to present danger to public health and safety of children. It applies to applications received by the board on or after the effective date of January 1st, 2016. It's been found to have no revenue impact. It may have a fiscal impact, but a statement has not yet been issued, and there are no amendments before the committee at this time.
Chair, may I invite my neighbors,
please.
My constituents up? Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chairs Bueller and Rayfield, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Alyssa Kenny-Geyer, State Representative for House District 46, parts of Northeast and Southeast Portland. I'm honored to be before this committee as I was the interim chair of it up until a couple months ago. And this is a committee bill that was introduced at the time that I was chair because of a really big need in my district over the placement of a crematorium very close to a residential area as well as to Vestal school, K through 8 school. I will like to defer to the I know you have a very full agenda and they've got a short video they want to show, so I will be available for questions, but I'm really honored to be here and have you consider this very important bill. Let me introduce yourself.
Oh, sure.
Are you first?
Yes, I'm first. Hi. Dear Chair Fagan, Vice Chairs Bueller, Rayfield, and members of the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency. For the record, my name is Leslie Beister, and I live at 204 Northeast 79th Avenue in Portland, Oregon. My house is adjacent to a crematorium and near an elementary school. I am speaking to you on behalf of myself and other families with children in Oregon public schools. Many public schools are now located in commercial use zones. Unfortunately, there is little or no oversight of industries which emit toxic chemicals in residential neighborhoods or near schools. This came to my attention recently when a crematorium located next to homes and less than 75 yards from an elementary school started operating. Fortunately, there's a chance to correct this oversight with House Bill 3056. There are many chemicals emitted through the cremation process, including sulfur-laden compounds, lead, arsenic, cadmium, hexavalent chromium, chlorinated dioxins, furans, and mercury. Several are carcinogenic and are known to exacerbate chronic conditions such as asthma. The U.S. EPA has stated that there is no safe level of exposure for many of these toxic chemicals. Even in low doses, they can cause damage to nerve tissues, the kidney, the brain, and death. Some studies have linked increases in birth defects to the presence of operating crematorium. When operating, the crematorium incinerator was very loud, and its smokestack spewed black smoke and pungent odors into our community. The odors often lasted hours after a burn was completed. Odors are often the first sign of a danger. Who hasn't been alarmed when they smelled something burning? Because of a lack of oversight and testing, the crematorium was able to operate and release visible black smoke and toxic chemicals onto the schoolyard and into the environment. The crematorium emissions contained particulates which fell on the playground and a garden where community members and students grow vegetables. Because of Portland's temperate climate, the playground and garden are used practically year-round. Children, being children, are active. They run, they scream, they get overexcited, breathe harder, thereby increasing the possibility for bioaccumulations of these poisons over time. The State Mortuary and Cemetery Board should have the authority to disapprove crematorium, especially if they impact the public health and safety of children. The point addresses, the bill addresses the point to consider when granting a permit, explicitly the proximity of a crematorium to schools and any place where children are likely to congregate. A school, a playground, and community garden certainly fit those criteria. Where children are concerned, we should follow the precautionary principle which states, do no harm. It is not necessary to wait for scientific certainty before enacting protective measures. Across the United States, cities are implementing the precautionary principle as the basis for their environmental policy because there is a social responsibility to protect the public, especially our children, from harm. We should not allow the operation of crematorium while children are present in residential neighborhoods and schools. Be brave, be bold. Support this protective health measure because the health of our children in our communities is at stake. And I think in your packets there is a drawing from one of the children in the neighborhood who, for people who cannot speak for themselves, this is part of the materials you have. Thank you for listening to me, and thank you to Representative Alyssa Kenny Geyer for bringing this forward. We are counting on the committee to protect the health of our children and community.
Thank you, Chairman Fagan and State Representatives for having us. My name is Chuck Spidell, and I'm actually a homeowner, business owner, and I have a son who goes to Vestal School where this where it's highly impacted. And I actually wanted to talk on a few of Leslie and Ted's points that I wanted to elaborate a little bit more on, and specifically the noise and the air quality. That's what we're very concerned about. The noise is typically you're going to hear it between 6:45 a.m. and 7 p.m. And this is pretty much when the children are attending school. They walk right by the crematorium grounds, and they're usually there before, during, and after school. So the entire time this crematorium is running, the children are directly affected by it. The gas lines and the smokestack, the output is very loud. As of right now, they were twice the amount of decibel levels that they're permitted within the city noise ordinance. So currently they're not allowed to operate. And the other thing we wanted to address too is, again, the air quality. That's what we're really concerned about, is because the air quality is basically unmonitored and untested, unregulated. And you can see the visible emissions as, you know, we've been showing you in these videos. And one of the biggest concerns is that these specific toxic materials are always up in the air. We have no idea what's in them. From the actual general permit that the crematorium is operating on, these are the list of the toxic substances that are in the air or potentially in the air. Particulate matter, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxide, carbon monoxide, and volatile organic compounds. The one that's the biggest issue on the map right now is particulate matter. In fact, EPA has an area of their website dedicated just to particulate matter and the health concerns. And this is from their website. I'm quoting directly from their site. The size of particles is directly linked to their potential for causing health problems. EPA is concerned about particles that are 10 micrometers in diameter or smaller because those are the particles that generally pass through the throat and nose and enter the lungs of potentially children. Once inhaled, these particles can affect the heart and lungs and cause serious health effects. If you do want to read that article, just go to epa.gov/PM. And finally, again, we want to reiterate one of our biggest concerns is the location and vicinity of the crematorium to the school. This particular crematorium is 100 feet from the school grounds. So it's literally across the street. And that's about it. I just wanted to say thanks again, and we really hope that you'll consider.
Can you show the video?
Oh, yes. And again, this is the original video that I actually shot, and I was walking home from the Vestal playground and saw this smoke that was emitting from the crematorium, 100% black smoke. And again, we have no idea what is contained in this smoke, and it's unregulated, unmonitored.
Hi again, Alyssa Kennegeier for the record. I was called originally about this situation by Ted Whitney, who is also in the audience here, very alarmed about this crematorium. It was a funeral home that was then bought out by a company in New Jersey who took it over and then started a crematorium. So originally it had been approved with a general use permit by DEQ. And one of the situations and why we're bringing this bill forward is that there seems to be kind of a gap. DEQ has regulations that say that you cannot have any spewing black smoke. There's some kind of level at which that is declared, you know, unacceptable, as long as it goes any more than 6 minutes continuously. And so no one has been able to catch this black smoke going for more than 6 minutes continuously. The noise ordinance under which this crematorium was actually shut down was something that the city runs. The city, it's hard because they only had one noise ordinance for the entire city, and DEQ many years ago reduced their noise ordinance section because of, this is actually many years ago, maybe under Governor Barbara Roberts, because of lack of funding. And so there's very little support in that arena. But to the extent that the city ordinance from Portland was able to come out, they caught it on multiple occasions. First gave them a warning, then a very small fee, and eventually, because they kept violating it, it was shut down temporarily until they could prove that their equipment was at the stage where it brought down the noise. So it's a kind of a gap. They're being regulated on noise, but the black smoke, as long as it doesn't go on from, no one catches it going on more than 6 minutes, is not a huge concern. And DEQ has said, you know, this is not one of our top priorities because there's not a lot of crematoriums. And so we're really going after dirty diesel and wood stoves and things like that. This is just like, it's a small area that's getting lost through the cracks. And so we had originally thought of doing legislation that would say no more than 500 feet or no more than 1,000 feet from a school. What we decided to do is really kick it back to the board that we think really should examine this, the State Mortuary and Cemetery Board, to have some discretion, but to have a real conversation about under what conditions should they not get a permit. There's got to be some place that there can be a thoughtful discussion on this particular industry, in particular residences.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Representative McLean.
It sounds like a good compromise, you know, as far as getting the dialogue out there if the dialogue hasn't happened. But you indicated that when it was a funeral home that it had a general application land use, you know.
Right, general use permit.
There is absolutely nothing in the land use reviews in the cities or the counties that talks about this type of an institution or business?
No, it doesn't. Apparently, crematoriums fit under the same general use, and under a general use permit, there is a way lower bar of trying to get any kind of public input. So the gap here is that when the funeral home went in, there was no real need for input. But when a crematorium comes in, you might actually want some kind of input. But because the crematorium was added so many years later, there was no chance under that general use permit. They already had the permit, and so they didn't need to do any public outreach.
So just one follow-up. Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, thank you. Is it appropriate, though, to maybe suggest in your legislation that, you know, you would hope to have either health and or DEQ folks available and or monitoring this discussion or something of that nature?
Yeah, we could certainly add in consultation with OHA and DEQ in this. We're trying to be as least restrictive as possibly in coming up with a solution and more make sure that the board that deals with this industry has a thoughtful discussion and that, you know, to be honest, that the crematorium businesses are on alert, that they need to really operate in a safe and healthy way, or the legislature is going to be paying attention.
Right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I don't really know that much about the cremation business or anything like that. I think you guys are probably not experts either, although I think you probably know more than me. You're talking about two things. You're talking about noise, and then this crematorium was shut down based on the noise, or why was it shut down? So my question is, aren't there existing things that you can use to shut them down, both for noise and for the toxic chemicals or the particulate matter or anything like that? Aren't there existing things that we can use to control that?
Do you want to answer that?
Yeah, I can actually answer that. You know, we tried quite hard to get them to stop for the emissions, but under this particular discharge permit, the crematorium is actually allowed to spew out that black smoke, and they have this very complicated testing system where one of their representatives has to be there monitoring the crematorium at a specific time, and it's counted through a duration of the day. So say, for instance, there's black smoke that's spewing for an hour, they may not actually count that. You could be spewing black smoke for 15 minutes, but according to this particular discharge permit, the crematorium is allowed to do what they're doing. So we couldn't get them to stop on those grounds. However, where we did find the loophole was the sound, and that is for the residential zone district. So there, right now, when they were operating last year, they were operating twice the amount of decibel level. It's usually, I think it's 65 decibels is permitted in residential zone. So when the city of Portland came to the neighborhood and did some monitoring, they found that they were over twice that limit. So we were able to shut the crematorium down temporarily on those grounds.
I believe that was on the third violation.
It was third violation, able to shut it down. Yes.
Follow up. Yeah.
So again, and you're excused if you don't know that much about cremation, but it just occurs to me, like, what causes the sound? It sounds like, seems to me like burning a body wouldn't create that much sound, or even, I think, and I'm glad this hearing's taking place after lunch, but yeah. But like burning a body, and that doesn't seem like a pleasant thing to me, but that doesn't seem like a source of a lot of toxic emissions. You know, I mean, maybe with me because I eat too many Twinkies or something like that, but do you know anything on that you can help me with?
Well, I know that part of the mercury is coming from the dental amalgams in people's mouths.
That makes sense.
So that's a big part of it. And then it's the people's bodies can just contain a lot of chemicals. But a concern is the mercury because it's a heavy metal that lasts for a while in the body.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would say to answer one of your questions, too, about sound, I was equating it to... Say, for instance, you turn your heater on in your home, the furnace sound. So imagine that sound that you normally hear, and it's about four times as loud.
Oh, yeah.
So that's typically how loud it is in the neighborhood. If you're outside, it can be anywhere to four to six times as loud. We actually have triple pane windows in our bedroom, and we can still hear the noise with the windows closed. So, yeah, I mean, noise is a huge issue for the neighborhood, especially neighbors like Leslie and Ted, Sven. They live, you know, two blocks away from the crematory, and it rumbles their windows. And again, children notice this. My child notices. He would notice every time we were outside. He would smell something in the air, and he knew what it was. So, you know, children are affected by it immediately. And, by the two biggest concerns are noise and sound, but... The bigger concern, again, is the air quality. We have no idea what's in that air. EPA, DEQ is not monitoring it. They're not testing it. So that's a huge concern. There's got to be health concerns about that.
Yeah, and apparently, Representative, there are different technologies that can be deployed to minimize both the discharge, emissions discharge, as well as the sound. This particular company was not using good equipment. And again, I think the board that oversees this particular industry could have a more thoughtful conversation about, you know, is it fair to consider just not having crematorium at all within 500 feet or 1,000? Or is it fair to say, you know, if you're going to do that, then I think Minnesota considered legislation that was actually taking fillings out of people's, if they lived within a certain distance. Connecticut considered barring crematorium within 500 feet. It might just be that if you're going to be operating in that kind of proximity, then you have to have a certain level of equipment. Again, that board who oversees that industry is going to know a lot more about it. We would like to charge them with how do you really protect the safety of our neighborhoods and schools.
Right. Thank you, Representative. I appreciate that.
Yes.
I just had a couple questions on you did more back on the chemicals. And so, in Ms. Spicer, when I look at, through your testimony, it says there's certain, I think you had noted many, was it? There's no safe level of exposure for many of the toxic chemicals. And I just wanted to know what those chemicals are. And you were referring to DEQ. I'm sorry, not the EPA. The EPA stated that there's no safe level of exposure for many of these toxic chemicals.
Yeah. Got the information there.
This is actually a copy of the general discharge permit, which the crematorium falls under.
Okay.
So I can read the actual. These are the emissions that are. Again, it says these are the emissions that these crematories have potential to emit. They're not tested, but this is what's listed in this document. It says particulate matter, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxide, carbon monoxide, and volatile organic compounds. Okay. And again, EPA has an entire article on their website that's directly concerned about particulate matter. And again, in this, and also in this this permit, they're allowed to discharge up to 250 microns of particulate matter. But on EPA's website, they're very concerned about 10 microns. So they're under this permit again, they're able to, you know, discharge more than, you know, 10 times the limit of what the EPA is concerned about. So that's where we have a lot of concerns too.
Paul?
Yeah. And so the DEQ, are they merely just issuing a discharge permit rather than testing the quality of the emissions?
Correct. And basically under this permit, what they do is they issue the permit, and the crematorium is supposed to report any extra admissions that happen throughout the year. It's at their discretion to report to the DEQ, but there is not in any kind of environmental agency that is monitoring any crematorium whatsoever. They are literally allowed to operate at all times at their own discretion. So again, it's at the crematory's own discretion to report any problems that may occur with their unit to the DEQ. Chances of that happening are going to be pretty rare, though.
Thank you very much.
Other questions for this panel? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see anyone else signed up. Is there anyone else who'd like to be heard on House Bill 3056? Okay. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3056. And, Representative Buehler, do you want to make that motion?
Madam Chair, I'd like to reopen House Bill 2174 to suspend the rules. For Representative Rayfield.
Thank you. Representative Buehler has moved that we suspend the rules to reopen House Bill 2174 so that Representative Rayfield may vote. Is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, so ordered.
Representative Rayfield, how do you vote?
Yes.
Thank you. And close the work session on House Bill 2174. Okay, and so as an announcement, we're going to carry over work sessions on three bills, 2578, House Bill 2637, and House Bill 2716. So we're going to carry over work sessions on all three of those bills. And with that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2910. Do you want to give us a reminder summary of that?
Yes, Madam Chair. House Bill 2910 repeals obsolete laws relating to agricultural experiment stations. The bill declares an emergency is effective upon passage, is found to have no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. And as members may recall, this was part of an initiative from 2014 and the House Bill 4133 that directed Legislative Council and Department of Justice to review statutes each biennium and identify outdated, obsolete, and duplicative laws.
Okay, thank you very much. I will entertain a motion on House Bill 2010.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2910 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Rayfield has moved House Bill 2910 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, please call the roll.
Representative McLean?
Yes.
Representative Nierman?
Hi.
Representative Scott?
Yes.
Vice Chair Buehler?
Yes.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
And Chair Fagan?
Yes. Okay, with that, Representative Nierman, how do you feel about carrying this delete statute so it's like shrinking government?
This could not be any harder than any of the other bills that
okay,
I carried.
So Representative Nierman will carry it, so I will close the work session on House Bill 2010. And with that, we are done with our agenda for the day. Is there... Oh, no, what am I doing? What did I do? Oh, I didn't even see these. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Just kidding. Oh, so we have them all. Okay, great. I was wondering why Bob Russell was joining us today. There we go. So I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2911.
Madam Chair, members, House Bill 2911 repeals obsolete laws related to courts and constables, damages for Y2K computer failures, and enforcement of child support judgments. It declares an emergency as effective upon passage. It's been found to have no revenue impact and no fiscal impact, and this is also part of that initiative under House Bill 4133.
Okay, I will entertain a motion on 2911.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2911 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
All right. Representative Rayfield has moved House Bill 2911 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, I think we can move beyond the Y2K scare.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yes.
I would like to disagree Y2K. With Representative Stark, as Y3K is upon us in any moment, and I would really like to look at the Dash 1 amendments before we move this to the floor.
Yes, I was indeed. I was in college during that New Year's, and I remember that one very distinctly. So seeing no further discussion... Seeing no further discussion, please call the roll. That was my thought exactly. Thank you.
Representative Newman?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bueller?
Yes.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Hesitantly, yes.
Representative Holden?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Yes.
And Chair Fagan?
Yes. Okay, and Representative Nierman will carry this one as well.
Thank you.
He's going to knock all these out for us. So with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2911 and open a work session on House Bill 2912. So we have the amendment.
Yes, we do.
Okay. Do you want to come talk to the amendment? Or?
Madam Chair and members.
Yeah, go ahead.
House Bill 2912 repeals obsolete laws related to transportation and motor vehicle laws, declares an emergency... And it's available upon passage. Okay.
Talk for 10. Yeah, can you talk for 10 minutes?
Otherwise, we'll see. okay.
Well, we can hear from you, and then can we close the work session and reopen it? Okay. So we'll hear from you. I guess because of posting, we can't do this. We can't actually... Do it until 1:55.
Yeah. Madam Chair.
Talk really slow.
Yeah.
And then, Mr. Russell's going to talk to us about the Dash 1 amendments.
Dash 2
amendments. Okay.
I'm Madam Chair, members of the committee, Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations. The Dash 2 amendments add another obsolete piece of law to the bill, which is the intent of the original bill. Last January, truck drivers were no longer required to carry a separate medical certificate in addition to their commercial driver's license. The federal government combined the two documents into one, and now when a commercial driver gets a physical, that document is sent to DMV. DMV keeps track of it and makes sure that they're physically qualified as well as they're qualified under their CDL. So because they're combined, there's no longer any reason to have a statute that says that you have to carry your separate medical card. Matter of fact, it just would cause confusion and perhaps a truck driver could get a ticket even though they are not required to carry it anymore under federal regulations. The federal regulations preempt the state law in regards to commercial driver's licenses. The feds have done all the regulation in that area. So right. That's the purpose of the Dash 2s. DMV is also here, and I think that they will tell you they're fine with it. And as you know, this bill originated with the governor's office, and I checked with them, and they're fine with the amendment as well.
Thank you very much, Mr. Russell. So I think we're going to close the, so I can reopen it, the work session, if I, I can leave it open and open another one? Okay, so we'll leave it open until 1:55. Thank you very much. So I'm going to open the work session on 2913. And is this, do we have to wait to 1:55 for this one as well?
No.
Oh, so it's just that last one. Oh, because of the amendment. Got it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Madam Chair, that was purely, I posted it and I'm not sure what happened. So we reposted it at 12:55. Madam Chair and members, House Bill 2913 repeals outdated and obsolete provisions and updates references related to human services programs. The bill declares an emergency as effective upon passage, no revenue impact and no fiscal impact for the bill. And again, this is part of the House Bill 4133 effort to repeal obsolete and outdated laws.
Great. Well, I will entertain a motion on 2913.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2913 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Rayfield moves House Bill 2913 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, please call the roll.
Representative Hobie?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Buehler?
Yes.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
And Chair Buehler?
Yes. And Representative Nierman will also carry this one. All right, with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2913, and we're going to stand at ease for about...
Chair?
Yes.
Would it be possible to ask a question if we have a minute or two?
Sure.
Okay. On the work session, the three that were set over, are there some amendments or are there some more testimony or things that we should be looking at? Because is there some kind of controversy or...
I think they're probably a different answer for each one.
Okay.
The proponents of the bill have just told us they're not quite ready for them to be worked yet.
Okay. So is there a work, like a work group, or is there amendments that we should be reviewing, or?
I think that, I don't know specifically on each one, but typically they're working on amendments that we probably haven't even seen yet because they're probably in the process of drafting them.
Okay.
Okay, with that, we're going to stand at ease until 1:55. I don't want to make Bob Russell wait any longer for this very exciting bill.
Listening.
He's not listening either.
As soon as you get that gaveling bill.
Communication.
All right. We're no longer at ease. We are now back. And I will entertain a motion on House Bill, on the amendments for House Bill 2912.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the House Bill 2912-2 amendments dated February 27, 2015.
In dramatic fashion, Representative Rayfield has moved the amendments to the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2912 be adopted dated 2-27-15.
And actually, the motion was February 27, 2015.
What did I say? Okay, correct. Thank you. We're not in discussion yet. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, is there any objection?
Dramatically no.
All right. And with that, the amendments are adopted, and I will entertain a motion on the bill as amended.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2912 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Rayfield has moved House Bill 2912 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
I do have.
Yes.
I just wanted to say that as I joined this committee, this was one of the first items that was actually discussed. And it's one of those items that it doesn't sound like it's a really big deal, but I think it is a really big deal to clean up your laws and make sure that all of the things that you have on the books actually relate to the issues and to the kinds of conditions or the kinds of services or the kinds of rules that we're trying to provide. And I think that the public, if we really got them to understand what this did, would appreciate it because they want to understand that our rules mean something. And they don't unless we have language that has meaning and we have laws that are actually needed and that we do not have bad connections between laws. So I think this really helps us.
Thank you. Well said. Yes.
Madam Chair, I agree completely with Representative McLean. But just a point of clarification, this is just clearing up laws, but the administrative rules is equally a problem, and they just stack up year after year, decade after decade. And believe me, there's lots of administrative rules that are horribly outdated that should be, there should be a culling process of that also, and it's not being done.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Yes.
I'd also look at the Constitution. There's a lot of things that have been ruled unconstitutional that we still have in our Constitution. So, surprising.
Yes. Interesting. Other comments, further discussion? Okay, seeing none, please call the roll.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Buehler?
Yes.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
And Chair Fagan?
Yes. And Representative Nierman is brave enough to carry this as well. This will be a great deal. This couple of those will be all four in a row. Yeah. you'll be able to use the phrase, good bill should pass, hopefully by the fourth one. So with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2912. And with that, let me make sure, let me double check my pages. Check with my boss over
both
here.
Sides.
Nothing
both
else?
Sides.
I'm good? Okay, both sides. All right. Very nice. Anything else for the good of the order? All right, with that, I'm going to close the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Effectiveness.